Good evening, everyone. Oh, great. Thank you so much for having me, Joan. Is he the bad cop? They're interchangeable. Tonight, I'm going to read a few poems that I've never read out loud, or at least in company. And I've kind of been working on a few things that I'm calling it first the cleansing. Due to some things that happened in my life, some experiences that I've had. The first group of poems, there's three poems, and they're about my brother and the war. And then the next group of poems, I think there's one about me. And then last, about maybe four poems about Farview State Hospital for the criminally insane. So. First, my brother in the war, Genus Bombus, another name for my brother on R&R from the war. Fat, black, fuzz butt. A yellow-striped bumblebee hovers like a copter in Nam. Wings swivel fast as blades chop air to maintain altitude. Keep my brother and the girl he bought for a night high until daybreak. When he got the five-day pass, my brother left the war, went for R&R in Bangkok, got a room at the Rex Motel, $5 a night, air-conditioned, swimming pool, 24-hour service. We guest-friendly, the manager said. My brother took the girl woman from New Pechaburi Road up to a rented room. Nothing to do with love, nothing to do with sex, no shopping, no sightseeing, everything to do with war, clash of skin. He attacked the cunt, fingered a trigger, belly crawled, scraped meat against meat, snapped twigs on a silk leaf dress. Thai woman in jungle design slid her hand over my brother's crotch, let it lay on his cock as a bumblebee's tongue sheathed and folded under the thorax. The woman stroked his launch as if natal skin, like the genus Bombus shivers to warm its wings for flight. When the grenade exploded, choked in her throat, my brother said he fucked the woman hard as if beating his jumble bumble head against concrete, hoping chopped bits of kids, bones of Viet women would leap free, free him. Rest, recuperate, my brother said is all he wanted. To hit the cunt, fall back to nest in Nam, where his head buzzed in twisted bond of flesh and machete love, where he craved to blow a bazooka straight up the ass, fuck the war to death. Kitchen March. I want to talk to him. That's why I listen through morning crack of wild violet necks bending straight up to light. I press an ear against purple, hear the way he used to call out those U.S. Marine Corps songs, get the feet marching to glory. On the down stomp of Southpaw foot, he barked left, left, right, left. I marched with painted red toenails, our feet one sound peeling the top layer of kitchen linoleum until the black resin backing was a sticky crumble and the floor shook its own wooden rattle call to duty. I laughed all over the rank and file. He ordered, wipe that silly grin off your face, private, and I did. He never let on that this was play, kept me stomping left, 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 right, left, long after my knees were weak and his legs up in his throat, wrapped around his Adam's apple, pushing into my vocal cords until I choked on the thought that he could be peeking through jungle weeds, watching me through elephant weeds from over there. Kill the children and burn the village, song for blisters on bare feet. No room to hide under the table with seven straight back chairs, squeezed shoulder to shoulder, their packed tight attention and their steel-toed legs unbending to the left, 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 right, left. Little move of going back and forth is calming.
Let me
read one from the book that I have here. Beekeeper. Alone, with three legs reaching, a yellow jacket lay like a virgin in the grave, curled on cool basement cement, stiff in the dead dream. It would have been easy to kick it away, toe to head, how it should be, if it had not awakened my brother in me. He crouched still at war, wounded flesh unhealed from elbow to phalanges, his writing hand cupped blood, southpaw unlucky in love. How did this soldier bee fly down rice paddy laundry chute into knickknacks, hunks of chairs piled one on top of two, three, and 25? Reconfigured, this massive wood is a bone hive of mangled bodies thrown in a stack of unidentified flesh. Like trees full of slant-eyed chom-chom that grow their white Viet meat transparent as wafer wings, my brother used when he flew into me sideways. The body he left behind is full of thick skin for ceremony to ashes. The thick gray-brown dust I keep on the tongue stings my eyes. Group two. Singing teacher. Short, plump man in meaningless gray. The chorus teacher calls my name as if judged to sentence me to smallness, to bring the ceiling closer to my skull. His fingers touch the white piano, white teeth of the piano. His mouth instructs, match each note with your voice. When sound comes ringing up, he cuts the rope, leaves me hanging. My voice breaks, not in half, but in bits of courage scattered across school linoleum. Each note I sing drops away, becomes mummed, vulnerable as the small ear unprepared to hold the sound of you do not belong, as if cupped between two megaphone hands to magnify isolation, to stimulate adaptive immunity. Intentions are needle pricks that infect me, to be seen a small thing. The singing teacher, my mama called him, shot me up with his music, vaccinated me, not with smallpox, not mumps, neither measles nor chickenpox vaccine, but with true blue parasites that eats to full belly, begins to grow. In negative symbiosis, I sing do, re, mi, from a mouth open so wide a bird could fly in, find a jibber-jabber nest of tones tangled in a jaw where a singing teacher barbed my child tongue, taught silence with graceful stroke of note, the sound of white piano teeth biting hurt so pretty, my voice curled to an embryo, afraid to be born singing. Field mouse. One. Two paws stretch forward, still stiff in stiff run, along the sidewalk where it must have fallen just before leap to street, headed for the neighbor's yard and last sprint into weeds. The way of the rodent is art of instinct, art of fear, art of sneak, premeditation, crawl, belly to earth, unearthing what we keep beneath, hidden deep in the stomach. At first, I think the field mouse is what I found hardened in a brown lunch bag, left as neighborly warmth on a chair holding my winter parking spot. Closer lean in, I see chalk gray fur already losing its alkaline shine, ability to make a grown woman hike up a skirt, stand on a chair and scream loose-brained. Ashen button nose points up to show open mouth, full of tiny tongue prayer, innocent as a child who kneels, whispers into locked fingers before tucked to dream. pink sliver lopped to the side. Heavy with unvoiced squeal hangs silent as echoes thumped at the back of the throat. That shade of flesh, almost virtuous, makes me remember what small town police Augie and Bliss said. Frank's losing his marbles, and that nigger better learn to act like he's got some fucking sense. That's why they beat him, so he could learn not to talk back, drop his head, eyes away, be dead. Fist to face, the way they said he would understand, meaning made in blood, promise of kinship, opposites rising, dark always in service to light. The pink of perfection, ephemeral as skin and bone. 2, Gussie the Roman cat, born with rule of instinct, does not go against order of nature, does not creep up to investigate stiff curl of guts, sniff what disdain is left behind, nor crouch near tinier paws, pressed so close they nearly touch human act of prayer. Scrap of vermin, yet plump of will, lives beyond tomb, a repulsive idea that remains as soil to till. The carcass has already begun to reek of Sunday morning rhetoric, bliss that fills a body with otherworldliness. Pinch of rotting flesh pricks my nostrils, scratches like scruffy feet scurry in last stretch effort to inflict a message inhumane as one left by law-abiding hands, the clenched fist my father refused to sanctify, make holy in a time of tongue muscled to silence. Group 3, and then Exhumed. This is at Farview State Hospital for the criminally insane. Part 1. Decades later, what would battered words say about severe beatings by guards? The cover-up autopsy that never recorded that all of T. Garrett's organs were gone, even the brain removed. Replaced with crumpled newspaper, sections balled and thrown into a bone cavity after headlines had been read. Fine print details too gruesome to lay eyes on. T. Garrett's body was a mere form determined to have been human, nothing inside it to speak. The made-up fact recorded and reported was that T.J. Garrett was dead of a pulmonary embolism, so what need had there been for healing two ribs, broken steel after 20 years? There is no other way to say it than to say it. Thomas Garrett was killed for guard sport at Fairview State Hospital. The way a man throws a stick, the way his dog fetches. The two playing into late evening, past time when keen eyes of animals begin to fail, cannot discern between the stick thrown and the stick already there. T. Garrett's body was like that, decomposed, returned to earth like the dirt already there. Just bones left to tell their rattletale. Secrets, decades deep in T. Garrett's empty body, rise from putrid dust. What say missing organs, the heart, the liver, the kidneys, the stomach, the spleen, and the lungs as they push against an uprooted tongue? Or the broken backstory along the spine, how guards train men to cockfight to the death or die? How a body like Thomas Garrett's was beaten for pleasure, wager, and tease. How else could the cage keepers be called bearers of good medicine, administer debilitating doses of Thorazine? 2, Thomas Garrett could have been my father. My father could have been Thomas Garrett. Oh, lordy, lordy, Thomas Garrett's body could have been my daddy's. Thomas Garrett's body is my daddy's body. I prayed and prayed, oh lordy, lordy, until the day he came home. Up from the dead, oh lordy, lordy, an empty man had to start from scratch of dust. Oh lordy, lordy, begin to shape my daddy into a man again. It's the last one. The last poem, Bête Noire. Who is the black beast now, hungry for the flesh? Who is a monster and who is not an angel? The same level of level, frontwards and backwards, coming and coming, let evil live. Did he come out alive, the journalist asks. Yes, that's what he said. Yes, that's what I answered. I was trying to put my feet on the floor, trying to get my head back in orbit. I was a helpless child born on the hump side of bituminous coal, so black midnight just as well be called dawn. I begged the coal demon to make me an angel, a real one with an iron staff, cloven feet, wings, not feathery, but the spiked kind, the kind that cuts small slashes quick enough to make wounds bleed slow, sharp like what I feel when I'm breathless with hurt, and no amount of face drowned in breast can take it away. What the man said finally hit me, like when the mine shaft shifted, crumbled down black stars, pummeled Mr. Skinny's head, beat him until he screamed, "Run, Frank, run." Skinny's dead, but not my daddy. He came up out of the dark hole of the criminally insane asylum, alive, knowing death rides the underside of every breath. That's what the man meant when he said, "Did he come out alive?" Said some didn't. Some died in there. All I cared about was my daddy and how he was going to live under shadows of bete noir monster men, and how he didn't want anything to do with heaven, just wanted to live in as much light as he could, face the black beast eye to mouth, teeth to tongue, man to man. Thank you.